never mind, start again. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Sometimes what you're doing you think is successful, and sometimes you don't. But that's still an attitude.
Mm.
You're always successful when you have the attitude that you're successful. And you're a failure when you have the attitude that you're a failure. And it has nothing to do with the events on the outside, but we think they do, and that's our delusion. We have a delusionary thing that says that it's how things ought to be or how I want them to be rather than how they actually are. And so basically you do something and you get a real result, and then you match it according to some rules or criteria, some oughts or woulds or shoulds, and then you say, they don't match, therefore I am a failure. Basically, the reality would be is that it's the rules that are the failure, because the rules don't match reality.
The rules don't match reality. Yeah. There are times when, and I think this is, well, the rules don't match expectations. Like you have, or the rules don't match your expectations. Although the reality doesn't match your expectations. Like, I think there are times when, you know, like it's a simple thing, like when you wake up in the morning. And there are times when you wake up and you feel okay. And there are times when you wake up and you feel like, oh, you know, I'm just.
Both of those times are time to practice. When you wake up in the morning, it's time to practice. You're being disappointed because you feel meh. Okay, so you feel meh. You know what? Start taking a deep breath and say, I feel fine. I'm okay. That feeling can be changed. You can change your feelings. But a whole lot happened when you said, I feel meh. All right. One of them was that you took on the attitude of a victim. You're victimized by being meh. Number two, you're not supposed to feel nah. The reality is that you do feel nah, but that doesn't mean you're a victim. That's just how you feel. That's reality. And you can change that by changing your attitude.
So is it a question of changing your attitude, or is it a question of accepting the situation and letting it pass?
Accepting the situation is the change of attitude.
Hmm.
Because the feeling, yeah, most of the feeling of yeah is that you don't like it. You're not accepting it. And you can change that attitude from, yeah, it's okay. I feel all right.
Yeah.
You're just still drowsy. You're not fully awake yet. And so the old stuff comes up in the sense of, I feel yeah, and I'm not supposed to feel yeah, and I don't like feeling yeah, rather than taking a deep breath. Never mind. We're okay. So you have to change your attitude. And you do that every time you wake up. You begin to practice correctly. And see what you're saying also along with that. The other part of it is that you're not supposed, you're a meditator now. You've been practicing all this time. You're not supposed to feel. Nah, that's a rule.
Yeah.
I don't like it, and I'm not supposed to feel this way. And the reality is that you do. Never mind. Take a deep breath and come out of it.
But what about something like, you know, there are times when like I can put some music on and it changes my mood. Is that an
No, you put the music on because you want to change your mood, and you change your mood because you want to. Somebody with a Victrola could be marching down the street with that same tune and you get pissed off. They're making noise. Yeah. It's not the music, it's your attitude that changes.
Yeah.
I hope people are not marching down the street with a Victrola. That's a mighty misuse of an antique.
Exactly.
So that's the whole idea, is that you can use music to change your attitude.
But it's you
that's changing the attitude, not the music.
So then that leads me to thinking, you know, when I think from our recent conversations about really what the Buddha taught, you can essentially break it down into the Four Noble Truths. You know, that's the heart of it. And
you cannot break it down and just leave it as the main teaching of Dukkha Nirodha, your choice.
Yeah.
And the dukkha comes from mainly wanting something you don't have. And a side point is that things are not the way you think they're supposed to be. But basically, you want things to be the way they're supposed to be. But oftentimes, we're also at odds with things the way they're supposed to be. But I want it different than they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so we want things, and we also have rules about it. And both of those cause dukkha.
But there are times, though, when you're not happy with the situation and you strive.
Why? Wait a minute. Okay. Why are you not happy with the situation? It's
like
because it doesn't match your standards. The situation is not good enough according to some rule.
But
the situation is not supposed to be like that.
But then if you didn't strive to change it, like say for example,
don't try to change the situation, change your attitude. And your attitude often will change the situation as a secondary. But the thing that do is to change the things you can change. And often you can't change a situation directly, but you can change your style, you can change your attitude. And that may secondarily change the situation.
Not that it happened all the time, but there were times when, you know, I had to go back into education to get a better job. Otherwise,
well, because you want a better job, you should have a better job. You're not good enough the way you are. Or the other attitude is, I'm going to go do that course because I enjoy doing that course. And who knows what the future will be? When I was in college studying computer science, I was doing it because I liked it and I was interested in it. And I had no clue of the companies that I would be working for eventually in my career.
Yeah. Right. But then, you know, can I share a story with you, which I probably wouldn't want this recorded, just between me and you.
Well, there's nothing that, I mean, everybody's in the same boat. You're okay, saying, oh, right. I'm
No, there was a period. There was a period in my.
I don't want. What?
Sorry, you were just breaking up there. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Yeah, no, there was a period in my life where, you know, when I was a teenager, you know, where I had no parents, and you know, I had you know, I was struggling for money, and then you know, there were occasions when I didn't have anything to eat, and I used to go into the local, this poor petrol, you know, this guy used to own a shop, and I used to go in that shop, and I, you know, I was that hungry, I had to steal food, right? And
you chose that to do.
I did. It was survival. Yeah.
Okay.
That's how.
Can you forgive yourself for that? That was a long time ago.
I
every child steals. I have never met a child who doesn't steal.
Yeah. But there are times, if I just sort of sat.
I have never met an adult who wasn't before that a child. So we're all of them thieves.
But if what I'm saying is, if I had accepted the situation, if I was wise enough to accept the situation, then.
Well, you couldn't because you were a kid. That's one of the things about the Dhamma. The Dhamma is not for ignorant children. That's why even in Buddhist cultures like Sri Lanka and Thailand, they give the kids the precepts because the kids are not smart enough to figure out for themselves that they shouldn't harm each other and themselves. So you give them the rules, and then they break the rules. And then the adults get pissed off, not the adults, but the parents get pissed off because the kids are not following the rules that they give them.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's unhappy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. I was just trying to think of there are times when you're not happy with the situation, and then you try and fight against, you know, you try and do something to change it.
Right. That's what everybody does. That's what we were taught. That's how the society works. That's why everybody's miserable. Don't try to change a situation. The only thing that you can do is change the way you feel, change your attitude, change your thoughts, change your body position.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, you're standing on the railroad tracks and here comes a train. You can't stop that train, but you can get off the tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you that have to change, not the situation. And yet most people, they'll stand in front of that train and try to ignore it. They call that choiceless awareness meditation. Oh, I'm choicelessly aware that train's coming. And all they had to do is get off the tracks. And then there's the Mahasi Popeye method. You know, Popeye the Sailor Man?
Yeah, yeah.
Great big fist. He's going to stand in front of that train and try to stop it. And that train's going to run right over him, too. But the right thing to do is to get out of the way. You can't stop the situation, but you can change the way you feel about it.
Yeah. And again, from our research.
In fact, you can change it to the point of, wow, isn't it marvelous that I can feel good even when that situation is really lousy? But the situation is lousy, and everybody around thinks the situation is lousy, but I'm okay.
Yeah. But you have to, for that to happen, you have to catch Mara early enough.
Yes, that's it. But it's not a matter of early enough. Always it's not early enough. It's got nothing to do with early enough. It has to do with right now. Can you catch the Mara right now? Because catching it early enough means that I'm too late. I should have caught it before, and now we're in the shoulds, woulds, and coulds again.
So does that mean seeing a situation, foreseeing a situation arise, before you see it arise, do something about it?
As it arises, you can't see things before they arise. You can only see things as they arise. And you do something about it immediately, right now. As it's arising, make a change. As those unwholesome negative thoughts happen, make a change.
So what's an example of that? Like, what would be a scenario? Like, what's a example of where you see...
Okay, so Granny is arguing with me. Okay, Granny, you're a really good one at arguing. Wow, I could learn how to argue from you if I wanted to learn how to argue, but you're a really good arguer. I'll give you this one. Give people what they want. When they want to argue, it's because they want to win. Let them win. You're big enough to give it away. You're wealthy enough to give that $1 million worth of good feelings to somebody and still be wealthy.
Wow. Okay. That's huge. I've never thought of it that way. Give it away.
Give it away. Let them have what they want. If you don't give it to them, there's dukkha. I sometimes use this example. Imagine that your brother or someone that you know very close, very well, comes to you, kind of maybe in desperation, I need $500. And you check your wallet mentally, you check your bank account, and you don't have $500. And so you say no. And now you've got two miserable people. One, he doesn't get what he needs, and two, you can't give him what he needs. Right? But if you say, I'll get you that money, I got it, I can find it someplace, now both people feel good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the scenario of children, because my children are constantly, you know, asking things from me, and some of it, you know, if I was to give them everything.
Children are the most selfish little brats in town.
Exactly.
All children are selfish.
But does that mean
you can compromise and make a deal, always make it to where they're going to have to pay for it. If she wants a cell phone, okay, she can have a cell phone. You got to wait till your birthday or something like that.
But, okay. See, what you're saying there, Dharmaratno, is you're replacing unwholesome thoughts with wisdom.
Okay.
But some of us, you have some people who are wise and some of us who are not so wise. I don't think I'm a very wise person.
Wisdom is a skill to be developed. Panya is a skill to be developed.
But how do you develop panya?
Well, the two ways of developing it is, number one, figure out what's the right thing to do according to the rules. This is why in Buddhism we have sila, samadhi, panya. We practice sila, we practice our behavior, because the behavior is easier to see when you're really stupid. You can at least see behavior. And so this is why we give the children precepts, rules, commandments, Sharia laws. It's for children, right? And when they accept that and integrate it, now sila becomes samadhi, the integration part. And once the person is integrated, then panya arises. And now with panya, the individual is ready for the Eightfold Noble Path that starts with wisdom, that really integrates the mind. mind, and when the mind is fully integrated, then our sila, our behavior, our virtue, our morality is built in to the wisdom package. It's built into, in other words, if you don't want anything, you're not going to hurt anybody to get it. And so with children, we start with the rules, but eventually the rules have to come off. All right. You have seen buildings all over the world made with concrete. Right?
Yep.
But you don't just order a concrete truck and have it come out and spill the concrete all over the ground hoping for a building. No, you have to put up scaffolding. You have to put up the forms. You have to put up the place for the concrete to be poured into. And then once the concrete is set, we take the forms off. So the sila is the forms. It's not the building. It's not the structure. It's the form. If you can understand that, the same thing is true with scaffolding. They put up scaffolding, for instance, to wash the windows. But the scaffolding is not the windows. After the windows are washed, you take the scaffolding down. We take the rules away once the product is done. And this is why that's actually the wisdom part. That's the noble part. The ordinary part is putting up the forms, putting up the scaffolding. And the wisdom part is taking the scaffolding down.
So it all starts with sila.
It starts with sila for children. So when adults like you come to talk to me, I assume that you've already had all the scaffolding you need.
I don't know.
You need to start taking it down now and live with the reality of what you've poured now that it's set. But for children, we need to set boundaries. We need to set rules.
Yeah.
But we need to do it in a way that doesn't harm the child. You don't tell the child no. You tell them later. You don't tell the child, for instance, put that cell phone down and go to sleep. You'll say, okay, it's time to go to sleep now. You got 5 more minutes. And then 5 minutes later, you tell them, okay, you got 5 minutes for sure now. And then 5 minutes after that, you can say, okay, it's time to, and they're ready for it then. And so the first couple of times that you told them that you've got 5 minutes, that was putting up the scaffolding.
Right.
So that it would pour into their mind correctly and set that now is the time that I've got to turn the phone off and go to sleep. And so they'll do it that way. But if you tell the kid right now, you've got to turn that cell phone and go to sleep. What is the child going to do? They'll do what they're told to do and they resent it. And then they grow up doing what they're told to do and resenting it. And the kids go to school and they resent it. And now here you are about to go to school again, and you still resent it. Can you, in fact, go to school and enjoy it?
My kids definitely don't enjoy school.
Pardon?
I said my kids definitely do not enjoy going to school.
I'm not sure what you said.
Oh, sorry, I said my children, they definitely don't enjoy going to school. They hate it.
All right. Well, every time that you send them off to school saying, what are you going to do today that you really like? Are you going to enjoy the school? Here's $5. Go buy all your friends some treats.
Yeah.
So that they go off to school with that $5. Oh, wow. At least today I'm going to have fun. give them an opportunity to start enjoying it. You're the adult in the room. It's your responsibility to help the child enjoy going to school, because otherwise they're going to be like all the other ordinary low-class dirt called human beings that do what they're told to do and don't like it.
Yeah.
Because that's the situation that you're in. In fact, the situation that you're in is the situation that you create, because you already don't like the situation. That's exactly what we're talking about here. Like school, the situation is school. The kids don't like the situation. Well, they have a choice. They're going to have to go to school. Why can't they like going? Because they've been trained to not like it. Who trained them? Who trained your kids to not like going to school?
Me.
And who trained you? And who trained them? And we can come out of our old training by training new. But it is a training. It really has to be practice over and over and over, enjoying what you're doing. Because often you don't have a choice, or at least you don't think you have a choice about what you're doing. So go ahead and do it, but you do have a choice about how you feel about it.
Well, maybe it's the fact that they see me resenting. It's like work, you know.
Your resentment, and they'll figure out why, and then they've learned your resentments, and they'll figure out why they have resentments.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you have to do is stop giving them examples of resentment and start giving them examples of being joyful. So practice for both yourself and your kids.
That's going to be one of my toughest lessons.
You take that from this conversation and you go enjoy being around your kids and enjoy and stop being resentful, because that's what you're teaching them is resentment.
Yeah, it's more so working, you know, the day-to-day grind of
the day-to-day is a day-to-day. It's not a grind. A grind is your mentality. You're the one who is doing the grinding.
How do I get myself out of the I've been thinking like this for the last 30 years.
Yeah, so I'm here to point out and say, look at what you're saying. Look at what you're doing. Because then you can look at it, too. It's not a grind, unless it's got a bump with it.
Yeah.
Put a bump to the grind. Make it enjoyable. And that's the kind of grind that you need to have.
That's a tough one. I can only do my best, but I've had this habitual thought for such a long time. It's like I hope I can change it.
No, you do change it. You're already changing it. Congratulate yourself for already starting to change it, and continue changing it. You've already got a right now to change it. All you have to do is remember that you've got a choice.
But does it?
Every moment you've got a choice about what kind of thoughts you're going to have.
So when that thought arises, It's a daily.
Ah, I caught you. I see you.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Watch what thoughts arise.
Okay. Yeah. And then the next step is to replace those thoughts with better.
I caught you. Yeah, I caught you. And that's the replacement right there.
Just the
fact glad I caught that thought.
Okay.
Wow, what a relief it is I caught that thought. I could have gotten myself into a real big mess if I'd have kept that thought going. But now I'm free.
So I don't need to go I don't need to replace it with, everything's okay, I'm happy, or.
I'm okay, I'm fine. Wow, I'm glad I caught that thought. Wow, I'm glad, ..
And is that the Buddha's teaching?
That absolutely is the Buddha's teaching. And anybody who really understands the teaching or looks at it can say, you know, Dhammarato's right. He's got that twist on it. Well, I didn't get it for myself. I got it from Bhikkhu Buddhadasa. He's the one that teaches you've got a choice about how you feel. You've got a choice. And if you have wisdom, then you can see those feelings and change them.
And it is, so in the words of the Buddha, does that go back to the Noble Eightfold Path?
Yes, and the Eightfold Noble Path goes back to the Four Noble Truths, and the Four Noble Truths goes back to that singular statement, dukkha, dukkha, nirodha. When you see the dukkha, stop it. And I like the phrase from the song, never mind, start again, is what Goenka says. But I've got one that I like, and that is, don't worry, be happy.
Ah, Bob Marley.
Don't worry, be happy.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Your grind is the worry. Yeah. Don't grind, don't worry. That it's not the situation, it's your worry about the situation, it's your grinding.
Ah, great. Wow.
This is what we mean, a change of attitude. And so I like to talk to students this way so that we can actually let them see what they're actually doing. Challenge their words, like the word grind. Because you're the one who does the grind.
Yep. Where does dependent origination come in then, in all of this?
This is dependent origination. I've already mentioned it precisely. I've been talking about points of dependent origination.
Right.
The grinding is the perception. The grinding is, in fact, the outcome of the perception. And that's what contacts you is grind. Can you see that you just created that? Because that's what gives you the feeling of being ground. And when you can see, I'm doing that grinding, hot dog, I can change the way I feel about it now. Okay, so perception, that's the same as the nama-rupa, the salayatana, the pasa, and the vedana. That part of the paticca-samuppada is exactly what I've been talking about.
Right, yeah. So you don't need to do hours of meditation, sitting down
it down as hours, especially in a formal practice, but you need to keep doing it over and over and over again as the hours melt by. Do it now. And then another hour and you see yourself grinding. Hot dog, I caught the grinding again.
Yeah.
Hot dog, I see it again. Hot dog. Aha, I see you, Mara. And it doesn't take a formal practice. The Buddha did not teach a formal practice. And when you have the image of the Buddha sitting around in a company where everybody's just sitting quietly, they're sitting quietly because they're happy. They're happy because they chose to be happy, and they practice being happy by going to the wood, going to the forest, going to a foot of tree, going to an empty hut and sitting down and look at what you're doing. Bringing mindfulness to the fore. Look at those thoughts. Look at the feelings. Look at the attitude. Look at the way that we are seeing things. Look at our victimhood and come out of it. The whole point about learning to be a winner is in the Kansanbian Sutta, number 48, where the Buddha talks about the hindrances as obstructions, and then he makes a statement that when the student knows that no matter how obstructed the mind gets, no matter how much grinding you do, you can say, aha, I can stop that. I can stop it. I can come back and see reality the way it is. I can see the truth of the matter. And then the Buddha says that this is a point of supramundane. This is the very first knowledge on the path, is the knowledge that you can change. You can come out of those hindrances. No matter how bad they've gotten, you can come right out of them and see reality as it is. It's supramundane. It's noble. It's a factor of the path. And most importantly, it's not, this attitude is not held by ordinary people. Ordinary people say, oh, well, I've got a reason to grind.
Yes.
And it's not me that's grinding, it's the day. And the day to day is the grind. No, it's not. I'm doing the grinding and I can stop it.
You say that this is the first step in the path. Are there more? Is this to me? When I hear this, to me, it sounds like this is it. There's no more. Is there more?
Well, if you can do that over and over and over and over again, then you gain some peace and quiet. Then all doubts melt away. And when the doubts melt away, then you're willing to admit when you're wrong. When you're easily admitting that you're wrong, then you can change it. If you don't admit that you're wrong, then you're lying to yourself. That's what ordinary people do. Now, what I'm doing is I'm going through the items in the Kansanbian Sutta one by one until people come up with the seventh knowledge is not only are they enthusiastic and constantly looking at the Dhamma, looking at their mind, looking at it, but they are delighted by it. You become delighted by your paradise that you've already been living in. You just didn't see it that way. But you become enthusiastic for the practice and eventually become delighted. That delight is what the Buddha talks about.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
See that. I'm delighted with the Dhamma.
That's amazing.
It's up to you. It's not amazing. Do you know what the word maze means?
Yeah,
it's not amazing. It's doable.
So
you get lost in a maze. That's what a maze is all about. It's hard to find your way through it. But all you have to do is just climb up out of the maze and look around and say, oh, okay, I can see this maze. I know to go there and left and right. And I know the path. I know exactly what to do.
So do you encourage people to, you know, while they're, do you also encourage them to read the Dhamma as well? Is that necessary?
I encourage mostly people to read the book between their ears.
All right. I get it. Yeah. Yeah.
And when they really understand the Dhamma, you see, that's one of the things that happens to everybody. It wasn't until I understood the Dhamma through Bhikkhu Buddhadasa and Ajahn Po, then I can go back and read the sutra. Aha! Aha, the Buddha said it there too. Aha, I see that. That's the way you want to read the suttas, is with that, aha, I got it. That delight of understanding it. But most people plow through it. They don't enjoy reading the suttas. So they need to read their mind first and need to get things straightened out, and then they can go back and prove to themselves beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's what the Buddha was teaching.
So really, if I can continually practice catching Mara and being thankful, I've caught you, Mara.
Mm-hmm. You keep doing that, what else can you do?
Yeah.
That's this, and you develop those skills. And those skills turn you into a delightful person. You're delighted. And then when anybody that comes by needs a spoonful of delight, you give them a shovelful.
Yeah.
And you still got plenty of delight left. Go practice. Practice being delighted. Whenever you see, oh, this is a grind, saying, aha, I caught you, and do it with delight.
Yeah. I will. Thank you, Dharma, right now.
All right, well, let's finish this talk now. You go off and practice being delighted.
I will.
Practice being enthusiastic.
I will. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Even practice seeing that when you screw up, aha, I caught that. Instead of being embarrassed and ashamed because of the rules. Oh, I should not have done that. Oh, that was a terrible thing to do. And you said, oh, wow, I'm really glad I saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dharma Ratne. Thank you. Have a great day.
Good to see you. You too.
Thank you.
Cool.
Talk to you soon. Bye.